featured guest, Bob Hoy from Institutional Advisors.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back our featured guest today, Bob Hoy, Chief Investment Strategist of InstitutionalAdvisors.com. Welcome back, Bob Hoy.
Yeah, good to be with you. Action in the precious metals market, gold or silver going up days on days. You get a lot of comment by the pundits about us. And then, of course, this one, when you had something like 17 or 18 down days in a row for silver, Googled around it, nobody was saying anything about it. So
you're taking the interesting contrarian perspective here and noting that the herd is so oftentimes wrong, or at least on the wrong side of the trade.
They're quiet about the trade and what it was. We follow the gold-silver ratio very closely, and it tells a story when it's moving. First of all, when the ratio becomes volatile, it suggests a financial change is possible, meaning a change in the financial market. When it goes up, it then suggests that if there's a party on in the financial market, that it will come to an end and or at least suffer a correction. So this is what you had with the gold-silver ratio down to, I think, 67 a little while ago, and needed to break above certain levels. Let me get over to, came down to 68. That was the low in April. That was a test of the 67.6 low at the 1st of March. Now, when the ratio comes down, you're in party time for wherever the party's going to happen, stocks, bonds, commodities, that sort of thing. And we had the move in commodities, essentially the industrial commodities like crude oil and base metals, rallying probably till around March. So this is where things began to change. And then the gold-silver ratio, as I said, the last test on it was down to 68 in early April. So the first move was getting up to 70, and that then got through the two key near-term moving averages, the 50-day and the 200-day. So getting above that was constructive number one. And then it had to get above the last high in March at 72, which it did in late May. And then it's gone on right on up to last week, right on up to 76.6, which is a very breathtaking move for the gold-silver ratio. And it's right up there and became a little overdone on the momentum thing on the RSI. So we were aware that the gold-silver ratio could go up. It had become volatile. And then the next thing was to look for the breakout, which was at the first breakout, which was at 70 on those moving averages. And then the next was actually on the index at 72. So it's up to 77, became a little overdone. But the key thing on it, Chris, is that this is saying that there's financial troubles ahead. And what we call it is the metallic credit spread, the gold divided by silver. And then what you also have here is that in the credit markets themselves, you had the credit spreads, which is the difference between high-grade and low-grade bonds. They got trashed going into January, February 2016 with the crash in crude oil down to $26. So then, since then, it was a full year of recovery, and it turned out to be a fabulous move in the base metals and in crude oil, and also in the credit spread. Just an outstanding move where spreads were narrowing, and that sort of reaching excesses in here. But within it, you also had the gold-silver ratio coming down into March, and then now up. So it's a distinctive break, and we would look for credit spreads to follow the actual spreads between high-grade and low-grade bonds. And we're also looking for the yield curve to make a turn in here, which is, of course, the difference between in treasuries between long end and short or maturities. And it is, let's call it this way, for the last month, it's been attempting to change trend. and hasn't quite made it. And on the credit spreads, you can often, when you've got party time in the spread market, where we have been, it can party into June on a seasonal basis and then start the turn. So we see that perhaps at this juncture, the gold-silver ratio is leading. Credit spreads are, well, let's put it this way, though, no longer narrowing. So there's a pause going on there. And then also on the Treasury curve, there's a pause going on there, probably building for a change. So what that has been doing for us is setting us up for a change in the party mode in the credit markets. And that would then have repercussions into the base metals, into crude oil, and into the stock markets. It's always fascinating to watch the credit market.
You've talked extensively about the gold-to-silver ratio, and it's something I try to keep on my radar screen as well. In fact, I appreciate your analysis in the area. I've struggled, though, to find any interesting correlations. Just a little side note here. Studying, for the actuarial exams, they just really want the student to have fully incorporated this concept of correlation. So correlation is just simply your covariance of your two companies divided by the square root of the variance of company A and company B. That's it. That's your correlation. But it really provides fascinating information into the expectations for your portfolio. So in the past, you haven't been too sanguine on the prospects for the precious metals on a forward basis. But you do seem to think that we're past the worst of this reaction. Is that fair to say?
At it. We couldn't see much rally for gold, but we're focusing on that the gold-silver ratio would change. So as it turned out, there wasn't a huge change in gold, and most of the action was in silver going down, which has become short-term oversold a few days ago. So this is why you can get a rally in silver, you can get a rally in base metals. But further out, you also have the U.S. dollar index in a pattern where it is setting up for a pretty good advance. And that, again, is not going to be too friendly to the gold and silver.
I'm so glad you brought this up because, as I mentioned, I tinker around a lot with my Alpha Stocks newsletter to give, just a solid portfolio each week, call it our portfolio laboratory. We compare some ignored, but I think essential components to a portfolio, such as the cryptocurrency craze. We use GBTC, which represents, of course, the Bitcoin. And we're finding some interesting relationships and correlations between the U.S. dollar and between U.S. shares and the precious metals there. I bet you've noticed the recent disconnect in correlation between gold and the U.S. dollar. Usually we have that solid inverse relationship, but it seems like week after week we see dollar weakness but no gold strength.
We've noticed it and have been not calling for much in the way of gold rallies because one of the features of a post-bubble contraction is a firmer senior currency, which still happens to be the U.S. dollar. And so you have that possibility. And also, you've had the gold bugs suffer you had the bear market from 2011 right down till the end of 2015. And we were on to that potential change at a good rally. And I pointed out something in last week's edition whereby that if you had a 10% rally in gold off of a low, the gold bugs would come out with forecasts that it's going to 5,000. Whereas if you had a rally like in 2016 where it was a 20% rally in gold off of a low, that then prompted all kinds of forecasts that gold was going to go to 10,000. On gold's price in dollars, the inhibition is that the dollar index is likely to firm up here over the next little while. And with us, it was the action was in the ratio, and that with gold staying relatively steady, that's where most of the price change came into silver and it crashed. And we'll get a short-term rally out of it here recently, but into June, late June, most of the industrial commodities weakening. You could have the U.S. dollar firming. and in which case the gold and silver wouldn't be doing so well. But if you get the situation where we're going into a financial distress, then silver would really fall relative to gold. You can take a look at it over the last 300 years where you can get gold-silver ratio in dollars, and then before that in sterling when it was the senior currency. And if you look at the major booms and contractions in financial history, of which there have been some huge ones, the tendency is that the gold-silver ratio goes down in the good times, and it goes up in the bad times. And I think the last high was around 100 on the gold-silver ratio. And then you've got metals analysts out there looking at, and they dream up that the amount of silver being mined and the amount of gold being mined is at a 16 to 1. Therefore, it should trade at 16 to 1. And historically, in the 1700s, it traded at between 15 and 16. Actually, was it in London in sterling? It was a very tight trading range there. And it wasn't until the 1825, 1830s where there was enough of a price movement that you could really appreciate it. It jumps out at you. The gold-silver ratio goes down when there's a party on, and it goes up when the party's over.
Of course, this is not exactly preaching to the choir here today, but that's okay because we need both sides of the argument to have sort of a balanced dialogue, if you will. We can't put blinders on. Sticking the head in the sand is not going to help our portfolios one bit. And I think Bob Hoy, if I understand you correctly, is not overweighting the portfolio today.
I've got some expiration favorites that I like, and I'm working on actually doing financing on one now, but you can have a bull based upon a dollar that is not changing, because going back into the 1800s, you had gold was fixed in U.S. dollar terms and also in sterling terms. But you would have the real price of gold would go up and down, and when it was going up in real terms, that was very exciting for the exploration and for the mining community. And so we're looking for this. At some point, the real price of gold will have gone up enough that people, mining analysts, start seeing the profitability rolling into the sector, and they can forget about what the price of gold is going to do in U.S. dollars. It really hasn't made too much money for anybody for the last few years, but we think the place to be is for an investor to be looking at the earnings on the gold mining side, and at some point recognizing that, hey, there's a pretty good uptrend in earnings. When you go back to the late 1920s and that boom, when Homestake was the senior producer and the stock got crashed down to something like 8.5 in the crash. But in 1930, 31, you could have bought the stock at $9 a share. And then at the end of 1932, and this was before Roosevelt started fooling around with the price of gold, so the gold was still at $20.67 an ounce, but their earnings had gone up by about 130%, mainly because the real price of gold had gone up by 130%. So the stock, as I say, in 31 and 32 did very well. And then Roosevelt got on the bandwagon with the rising real price and then added even more to it, so that eventually Homestake stock in the mid-1930s, 36, 37, 38, was trading, around $60 on a $9 purchase. And in those days, the mining company used to pay out most everything in, by way of dividend. And it was paying $4.50 a share dividend, and you had a very original $9 purchase. What I'm trying to do is point out to investors, trying to make money out of gold when you're in U.S. dollars can be frustrating. But making money out of gold shares when you're in U.S. dollars can be very profitable if you play it right.
Now, that is music to our gold aficionados' ears today. And let me just corroborate your thoughts. Peter Spina, the young wizard who started Gold Seek, it has to be almost 20 years ago, he has passed along a remarkable miner to me, a producer, and I actually have it up on my AlphaStox newsletter list. And I've pushed a lot of the Texas No Limits chips, but there are some other question marks here. And I know you're watching U.S. equities. I just talked to Martin Armstrong. We had him on the show. I know you're familiar with the forecaster. Big movie, very controversial figure, great guy. One of the few people on our show to say the U.S. stock market has not even likely begun its ascent. He believes, as do frankly do I, that we are in the middle of a melt-up similar to circa 2000, maybe more like 1928-29. It's difficult to forecast just how high this market could ascend before the madness of the crowd dissipates. What are your thoughts?
We've been playing it quarter by quarter. From October, we're figuring whatever problems were in the market would likely clear. That's the usual seasonal. Then my technical colleague on November the 3rd got a, what we call a springboard buy, which is a signal within a flat to rising market trend. And then along came Trump win with what we've been calling the pro-business administration. We called the initial move right up till February as rational exuberance because it was based upon a potential change to a pro-business administration. Also, getting rid of the most anti-business administration in U.S. history, which is all very constructive. And then by February, you had some of the technical indicators getting really overbought. So we've just been calling it plain exuberance. And exuberant it is, except for the last few weeks, which has been, let's call it moderate levitation. This can continue. We haven't seen the changes in credit spreads that one can get when one has been in a market as exciting as we've been in. And we're not getting the change in the yield curve yet, but they will change at some point and give us the advance on probably the end of this bull market. And now, throughout history, the great bull markets going back to the South Sea bubble in 1720, and then the next one was 1772 and et cetera, 1825, 1873, 1929, then 2007, that as they occurred in Europe, those bubbles reached excesses in May or June of the year. Remember the old saying, sell in May and go away. But then with New York became an important market, not the senior market, but by the 1873 bubble, New York was an important market. Europe and England reached their highs in May, June, and then New York made a speculative high in September of that critical year. And then the same thing happened in 1929 when Europe set highs in May and June, and the New York Stock Exchange came in with that extra leg of speculation in September. So who knows? This could happen. How high is high? We don't know yet. We know that the limitations will begin to be seen when the credit markets turn. They're still positive. So, it looks like the North American markets, Toronto and New York, could have a pleasant time during the summer. As I said, there's a probability that, say, the European market, but we looked at the technicals the other day on the stocks, European stocks, and also on the CAC 40 or whatever it is. No, we were not getting technical excesses there. So as far as the rising market can go, it's going to rise until we see something adverse.
I like that. You know, let's keep it simple. And I try to keep it simple here, too. You know, I keep an eye, a 7 momentum and sentiment indicator created by USA Today. Anybody can pop it up on your Google search. Just type in there. It incorporates everything from the put-call ratio, the traditional, to a few more, I think, intriguing concepts. But I think mirrors most of what you've pointed out here today, that despite the fact we might regularly be seeing new highs, there's no euphoria. We're not getting that crescendo that tends to accompany peaks and zeniths in U.S. shares, the U.S. equities markets.
The seasonal is that things are going to be good through till June. first step. Then we see what happens after that. But at the moment, we're still riding the positive into a seasonal high around June.
All right, Bob Hoy, Institutional Advisors, a lot of fun and really useful, pertinent information. We're going to look forward to having you back on GoldSeek again in 2017.
Very good, then. Chris, always fun to be with you.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.